possession number 14975, William Rochester, Real 6.
Rochester, Real 6. How long were you at Catterick, Mr. Rochester?
I think a couple of years. I think about. I'm not sure what year it was. I could go and have a look at my book, like, but I think it was about 30, back end of 32 or the beginning of 33 when I left Catterick. But while I was at Catterick, my name had been transferred to India and I was on the 2nd Battalion Strength and only attached to the 1st Battalion for about 12 months. And there was drafts going. Twice I was on the square with a draft. I'm told to get on the square with a draft, all my kit packed and everything, and names were called out to go in the buses. And I was left there. And the RSM used to come up and say, "You're still with us. Off you go. Back up, back you can." That happened twice. The third time I was lucky, I went into the bus and I went to India.
Had you been promoted whilst you were at Catterick?
I was a corporal, yes.
It was pretty quick.
When I was at the depot, when you're at the depot, your 30 squad, you had, after about 4 or 5 weeks or something like that, 6 weeks, I'm not sure, the sergeant selected four people and tied a piece of white tape around your arm. And I said, "What's that for?" He said, "Well, it's for nothing, actually. But you are now an acting unpaid Lance Corporal, but you're still a private."
And you carried that with you into
that you will get you off doing fatigues. You will be in charge of a fatigue party, like the corporal has been doing now. So you're relieving him, and you four will do that. But you're still a recruit, and you're still a private, and nothing else. When we went to Catterick, we had this stripe on. We were taught to keep the stripe on. Well, and I went into the into company, and the sergeant and I said, "What's that?" I said, "Well, I was told to keep it on." He said, "You might take it off now." I said, "All right." And so I took it off. Then I was called into the company commander the next day, and I didn't know what for. But when I went in, he asked where my stripe was. I said, "I've taken it off." "Oh," he said, "well, you shouldn't have done that." So, all right, well, put it on. So I told the sound major to tell me to put it on, the worst of that effect, and you want to got a piece of tape and put the piece of tape around it. And I don't know what he wanted me for. But the next day, I was called in again the next day, and he said, "Now you can take it off. Sound major, take that stripe off." So the sound major took it off. Yeah. And there. And when I went out, part two orders are out. I'd been promoted Lance Corporal on part two orders. So I had to go to the tailor shop and get a proper Lance Corporal stripe put on from the depot. So I had 6 weeks in the depot as a private. And then from then onwards, I've always had something, a tape of some sort on my arm. But I was still a private at the depot, if you ever understand, till I got my Lance Corporal on part two orders. And then I sat the exam, promotion exam to corporal in Catterick when I was there. I would be around about a year that I'd been in the army then, you know, around about a year. I sat the promotion to corporal at Catterick. Had the thing over, and we did quite well, we passed that. So, like, and then I was called into company office, and they said, that "We're posting you to the depot as a Lance Corporal instructor at the depot, Newcastle." Oh, what for? I didn't want to go back there. I wanted to be still in the battalion because I thought, the depot, you're going back into prison again, you know, you're going to be bound in there. But it wasn't like that as a corporal, you see. That's when I got there. Anyhow, I went back there as a corporal. The RSM sent for me, said, "There's a promotion board next week, I want you on it." I said, "Is it the one from Catterick, sir?" He said, "Yes, it is. You do the same one down there." I said, "Well, I've just done it at Catterick in the past." He said, "Well, that's all the better. You should have come out tough, shouldn't you? You're still doing it." Well, I mean, you do an exam. The first thing you do when it's over is find out the answers. And if you're wrong, you rectify them straight away. I said, "But I know all the questions, I know all the answers." And he said, "Then you should come out top. But you're doing the exam, that's all." So I did the exam, and of course I came out top. I had a good rest. You see? Now, shortly after that, there was five of us at the depot, five lance corporals and five sergeants, five corporals and five sergeants, that's five squads. And these other four got on to me and said, hey, they're promoting people at the Catrick that hasn't passed the exams. I said, well, how do you know that? Oh, we've been in touch with people. We've been in touch with somebody at Catrick. You know, you have to phone Catrick and get some information about it. And saying he's been promoted corporal and he hasn't passed his exam yet. You know. They got me talked into going to the sergeant major. Well, the schoolmaster, you know. So I went in to see him. I told him that I'd like to complain if I could. I'll have a word with the major to say why I've been overlooked for corporal when people we know at the depot, at the battalion, have been promoted. Oh, he said, yes. He thought about it and he said, I'll see you back. I'll call you back. That'll do it. Take him out. So the sergeant marched me out. And the next day he called me in. He said, that's quite true. They have promoted people at Catrick. I'll take you along to the major. So I went in the major. And he said to the major that this Corporal Rochester wants to know, Lance Corporal Rochester wants to know if there's anything he can do about. He's been overlooked for promotion. He's passed the exam twice, and then promoting people in Catrick that haven't passed the exam at all. So he said, "Yes, I've got a perfectly good answer for him. You, sergeant major, tell Lance Corporal Rochester if he doesn't keep quiet for the next few weeks, I'll put him in among the band boys. Now take him out, Sergeant." Sergeant Major. So you know, the RSM managed to march me out. He knew I wasn't 18. And the day I was 18, I was promoted to corporal.
What were your duties as a Lance Corporal with the battalion when you first got your stripe?
Just a section commander. I got a section. I was doing a section commander, but I wasn't long enough there to do anything. Shortly after that, I was pushed down to the depot as an instructor. I was just in charge of a section, eight men.
Did you get an increase in your wages with the first stripe?
Yes. I can't remember what it was, but it was coppers. You know, I did. I got paid a lance corporal. And then I got promoted. When I got promoted to corporal, I got paid a corporal.
Was there any envy within the unit because you were getting your stripes so quickly and others probably were envious that you weren't?
I don't know about Catrick because I wasn't there long enough. A couple of years afterwards, and I was at the depot as a lance corporal. And the lance corporals at the depot were all right because they're the ones that pushed me to get promoted. And they knew I'd been twice on the exam, you know, and passed the exam. And they said, well, you should pass the damn thing, shouldn't you? I said, of course. I said, I told the RSM, I should told the company sergeant major, I should pass it because I know all the answers. Well, will you tell us? I said, no, that's not fair. No, but you know them. I said, yes, I know, but I've already been on the thing. You know, you haven't. That wouldn't be fair. And, yeah, they took it for me. And it was a good group. We were all right.
So when you moved from the battalion to the depot, mm-hmm. You were going into this training situation. Well, you were a trainer.
Uh-huh. I was a corporal then, and we had to take our turn drilling people on the square at the time. So it was quite good.
Was part of your training to project your voice? We actually trained to to give these commands?
Yeah. I had to shout across the far end of the square. You used to have them lined up. At four people on that side in me section. I was in the 32 squad then. I'd have 16 at that side and 16 at this side. I'd give this fella an order, or I would shout an instruction to him, and he had to pass it this across the square, and then the last one had to write it down what he got. It was really fun. It's terrific. You never get one back, you know. And you had to shout yourself. And we had to do that. We had to shout. We had to learn to pass your voice, because as they were marching, the fusiliers were at the other end as well. You might have two squads of fusiliers up there. You have two or three squads of your own on the depot down here. So you had to make your voice reach your men. And of course, once you start shouting loud, you get a sore throat. So this old sergeant I told you about from the First World War, I'll cure that for you. What do you? I said, what do you do? He said, I'll get some, I'll tell you tomorrow. So he came back the next day and he had a little tin with Vaseline in. I said, where have you got that? I've been to surgery, this is pure Vaseline, it's all right. And a piece of thin string that used to tie around the sugar bags. Very, very fine string, not, it wasn't a line, a cord in the, you know. He wrapped a piece of cotton wool around there, thick note of Vaseline. He said, now swallow that and then pull it out. I said, why can't I do that? He said, you can if you try. I'll show you how to do it. So he swallowed it and pulled it back again. And the Vaseline was halfway off, you see. Right, he said, now you've got a piece. So we've got a piece made up for me. And he was pulling his back and swallowing it like, just like a fiddle. You do it. And I got hold of it. It took a good bit to get it over. But once I got it over and pulled it back a couple of times, I was all right. And that struck me marvellous. I never had a sore throat. Before I had to do any shouting or training, before I went on training, I said, get that Vaseline down and get a good up and swallow it and pull it down, swallow it and pull it down. And it, right down your throat, down the end, it was smoothened out right, marvellous down there.
Lance Corporal, a difficult task. And you're at the end of the line, aren't you? You've got
Officer,
Sergeant, Corporal, Lance Corporal.
But I was only at the depot. I was only where it was 30 men, you see, 32 men, a squad of men. That was all. And the Corporal was there 9 times out of 10. He took charge. All you had to do, what somebody, the thing that somebody else didn't do. You know, if you saw something that nobody else had done, just do it. And you were in charge of fatigue parties. You had your 4 lads in your squad, and you used to supervise the 4 of them, just walk around and say things to them. It was a good job. As long as you knew your job, what you had to do, what you had to teach, you had to learn it off really pat, you know, to do it and remember it. So, and that was all to it. And well, any instructor is the same thing. He's got to learn his job. If he knows his job, the job he's doing to the others is simple, easy. I found a lot of old army instructions, army things, army manners and ways of doing things work wonders down here at the factory when I was in charge of people.
Did you, because you'd been a private soldier yourself for a while, did you, for yourself, for your own personal understanding, did you decide on how you would treat your men?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
What was the basis of that?
Never mind how they trapped me. I wanted to treat them as human beings. I wanted to be able to talk to them and be able them to be able to talk to me. I was supposed to be their leader, their instructor, their leader. I didn't want anyone to be afraid of me or and stand away from me and not come and tell me if he was wrong, if he had any trouble at home, if he had this, if he was in short of money. Don't borrow it off anybody, this, you know. And I hated them gambling. I wouldn't let them gamble. I walked into the classroom, into the room one day, and there was a table full around the table and they were gambling, and I just yelled at them, made every one of them stand up and back off the table, and I crammed everything up. I got the shovel, the coal shovel, scrammed everything under there, the money, the cards and everything, threw it on the fire, all that. I said, that's your money, and if any one of you steal or thieve from anyone else, and I know you'll try, you'll be for it. Now I did no more of that. I went straight over to the canteen and I bought, what was it, six or eight, I'm not sure, tins of whitewash and tins of khaki colour for the equipment, and 2 tins of lacquer. I took them back into the shop, into them, and put them on the table. I said, look, I've thrown your money in there. You might have some left, you might not. Some of you might have nothing at all. That stuff I have bought for you, for the first time and the last time, that will clean all your equipment the rest of this week. Now, no more gambling in this barracks. Just walked out. Those 2 kids come after me and they said, sir. I said, no, Corporal. You know, straight away. He said, why did you do that? I said, well, that causes thieving. If you've got no money to buy your stuff, you've got to keep your equipment clean. You're in trouble if you don't have your boots clean. You're in trouble if your equipment's not blankoed properly. Your white belt, you can't go out until it's polished properly and that. You've got to have that. You've got to have shaving stuff and that. You've got to have some money. You only get a little bit of money. You can't afford to gamble in here. When you leave here, you can please yourself. He said, we just wanted to know. Just wanted to know. We've learned something. And that was it. I had a hell of a squad after that. I did that. And I told every squad I got at the depot that I would do the same if I caught them.
How did you encourage them to talk to you?
By talking to them. Talking to them. I was in the barrack room with them, remember? And I used to go around. And if there's a crowd of them sitting talking or reading or somebody reading a book or stories or something like that, they're sitting nattering around the fire in the winter, I used to go along and say, can a stinking old corporal join you or someone like that? Can one of your bosses sit down here and talk to you? Or, say, or do you want me to take my coat off? Take your coat off. I said, all right. So I said, wet my coat off. I said, I'm the same as you now. Can we talk? He said, talk to me just the same as you're talking to them. I said, what about if we swear? I said, well, all right, you swear. I can swear and all, you know. We never heard you yet, I know, but you will one of these days. And then you just talk to them, you get on with them, and talk to them. I did that all through the army, all through my army life. I was nearly in trouble once as a sergeant major by having too many people on leave. You know, I had a board, it's out of order this, you know. I had a board made, like you see in the pubs, a board like that, with a hinge board on the wall and a double door on it. So the whole lot would close up. And I had a row of nails nailed down there. The platoons in the company, the platoons, a lot of nails, and I had some discs like that with a little hole in, everybody's name on there. And on this side, all there was sick, hospital, employed, where they were. So my company was on there somewhere all the time. A fellow went on leave and lifted his name up and put him on leave. Well, when we were down the south of England, about 43, we were only allowed six people on leave at the time. Well, you get a chap coming up, he said, I've had word from my pal up there, my wife's mucking about a bit, you know, can I go on leave? I said, well, I would like proof of that first, because I'm not, you're going to kid me if you can, you know, to get leave. No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that with you, said Alan. He said, neither will I. Neither will I. I said, where do you live? He just told us where I live. I said, okay, I'll find out. I'll come back and see him in a couple of days' time. So I went up the audio room and had a pal in the audio room, RQS. I said, can I use your phone? He said, yeah, what do you want to do? I said, I want to talk to the police in Sunderland. So I had a word with the police in Sunderland. Give this fella's name and his address. I said, have a look at the family. And he said his wife's having problems. His wife going out with other people and problems at home. See if you can find it, if it's right or not before I let him go. He'll bring me back. Say, no, it's all right. Oh, yes, it is. You know. And I only had one that come back saying the wife was perfectly all right. She wasn't. You know, so I gave him a good show enough. He apologised for it. If they were having problems, or if the kids were sick, or the parents were ill, you know, like that, and if it was genuine, I said, tell them, get them in and say, look, I'm giving you a pass. And if you do not come back in those 5 days, if you do not come back, all leave stop. I'm only allowed five, and if you look up there, you can see there's 12 or 13. Count those discs, they're on leave. And I should only have five. And I'll stop every leave if you come to uncle. I should tell everybody that. You know, I never lost a man.
We can leave that in because it is part of your technique.
And the colonel came round one day. He used to have he'd go around the companies, Appleby, Chips Appleby. He used to go around the companies for a scale air parade. He knew something was on the board, but he didn't know what. But he used to ring up to the company commander and say, I'm coming to your company at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock or half past 7 for scale air parade. That meant you wanted to count how many we had and everything. You wanted to see the pieces of paper and all that. You see that all these sergeants roll. Of course, the company commander used to say, Bill, the skipper's coming out scale air tomorrow. Oh, that's all right. I whipped those people off and put them on this side. phone across to the 16th Battalion, who were at Dover. Sergeant Major. Sergeant Major Smith, John Smith. He used to be in the pub at the top of the street. John, can I borrow half a dozen men tomorrow morning? That was seven. I thought, I've got a scale here. Oh, right, okay, okay. And they'd have seven men over there, dressed up in PT kit, fully in. The sergeants would count up, and the skipper would go, the old man would go around and have a look at the load. He never tweeted yet. But he got one of these boards made in the, for the RSM. He asked, told the RSM to come down and have a look at it. And then he had to go back and get one made at the Pioneer shop. And he had the whole battalion on a wall, like that, with discs. And all the information, he had to give all the information to the RSM after that, of any movement of your men, and he moved them on the board the same way. And when we moved, but I had that for years in England. As soon as I was sergeant major, I got one made. Sheet of paper, just stick it on the pins, shut the clip and put the clip on, and the things didn't fall off. And you had your men there all the time when you were there.
You, as a Lance Corporal, you say you slept with the men.
No, I beg your pardon, I slept in the same room as the men.
Sorry, slept in the same room as the men. Did you eat with them? Or was it special mess for you?
No. I ate with them. I sat with them. As a corporal, we had our mess. But in the dining room, we sat at the head of the table. I sat at the tail end of the table with them, so I could watch everybody up the table. Because at the depot, you're always hungry. And there was two slices of bread on the table for you. And as you were going by, you could, if you're watching properly, you can see two slices disappear. And there, and they get up the top. And if there's a fork on the table, or if a knife, he'd have a knife on his pocket. When he gets up there, right at the nook, he sticks his slice of bread, two slices of bread underneath with his knife underneath. And he had his toe at the top. And this fella shouts, go on the, and the bread was in a big tin, like a dustbin thing, you know. Slice, they just cut the bread into there, get two more slices out of there. He could watch them coming up.
So you were obviously in charge of training, or part charge of training with the men, going through the same routine as you'd gone through.
Yes.
You mentioned a corporal's mess. How was that organised?
Well, corporals and lance corporals. It was just like a canteen. It was a canteen for the corporals and lance corporals.
And this was a separate hut or
separate
place?
Building. It was a separate building. Well, no, it was a separate room. It was your mess, like the canteen. If the building was big enough to have the corporal's mess there, you had it. If it wasn't big enough, they hadn't had another one. At the depot, it was slightly long from the canteen, you see. But there was only the corporals and the corporals and lance corporals used that place.
And what was there?
Just like a canteen.
It was the canteen.
You could get the same in there as what you could from the canteen.
But you ate with the men for the main meals.
Yeah.
And the rest canteen was
in
there.
The depot. It was a room actually, the canteen. Then you came along a little corridor and you went into a room. That's what it was. But your food and your tea and everything you wanted came from the canteen through the shutter bar. There was a shutter bar there, and there was a couple of girls used to serve you. You went to the shutter, and if you wanted tea and coffee or biscuits or chocolate, anything, it came from the canteen, because there was only five or six of us. There was five of each. Five lance corporals, five full corporals. So
was this
10 of you in there.
Was this what you paid for yourself?
Mm-hmm. You bought it yourself. Yes.
Was there a head, someone in charge of the canteen?
No.
Of the mess, sorry?
No. There was a canteen manageress, which looked after your room, and the cleaners and all that did it out. Canteen and that.
Did you pay for everything on the spot, or was there a bill? Or?
No, you paid for on the spot. You got on take when you were in the sergeant's mess, if you wanted. But in there, just the one.
How long were you actually a Lance Corporal?
Yeah, till I was 18.
Until you went through the examination, and then of course at 18 you got your second stripe.
Yeah.
This role would be a little bit more arduous than the Lance Corporal's role.
I was at the depot as a Lance Corporal for a short while, and then I was moved back up to Catterick. Then I went on to a draft.
So You were, at the age of 18, you were at the depot as a Lance Corporal at 18, and you got your second stripe.
At the depot.
The depot.
Yes. And I then stayed at the depot for a few months, I don't know how long, at the depot. I did a couple of squads or three squads at the depot. And then I was posted back to the battalion again at Cantrick. And then shortly after that, I got my name was transferred, and then the thing started. And within 6 months or so, I was away. 6 months, 9 months, I was.
Had you got involved in things like guard duty, commander, and this kind of thing as corporals, Lance Corporals?
As a corporal, yes. Yes, guard commander at the depot.
How was a guard instituted?
How was it?
How was it produced, the guard, in effect?
Well, it was your turn to find a guard, your section, your platoon. You were notified, the sergeant was notified that it's your turn to do a week's guard at the depot. So you selected your groups, each section. You had three sections. If you had three sections, 3/8 or 2/8, you only had two of them. On guard, because only one man on duty, and he was just standing on duty watching people coming in and out, and making sure you were dressed properly if you went out, stopping everybody coming in, finding out who they were, and then phoning down to see, you know, if they could come in or not, to see the company sergeant major or a sergeant or something like that, or if it was a relative of a sergeant who was in married quarters, you directed them to the married quarters and things like that, you see. So you only had four on, and they just changed that over. You were on 24 hours, the Lance Corporal was 24 hours, the Corporal was on for 24 hours. Now, your corporals changed over. You mucked in with somebody else, you see? So, because you couldn't have a corporal. If you had four people, you had eight in the section, you couldn't do 2 days off the start. Your eyeballs are hanging out, sort of thing. So the corporal would come in and relieve you a bit. And then you would find that at the depot, at the time we were there, we would have a corporal from the Northumberland Fusiliers would come across and do guard duty for one night to finish the last squad off of your lads. You'd do it. And we would do the same for them. One of us would volunteer to go up and just do it for them at the depot. It just worked on like that, you see.
What was the standard of dress for guard duty?
Just your battle dress and your rifle and bayonet.
How much warning were you given before, you know, between saying yes, you're going on guard and actually going on guard and the preparation that went into it?
Well, you would get to know this week that you're on guard next week. The platoon was on guard next week, so it was up to the corporal and the sergeant to select your four people straight away and tell them, right, guard duty, you're on guard duty in a week's time, and then sort them out.
So they were then, their job was to get up to standard, high standard, presumably.
This was practice for them more than anything else, you know, that's more than anything, practice, that have been given responsibility. You got that when you were towards the end of your training. When you had all your full uniform and that, towards the end of the training, you were pushed in to do one then. And this was just to give you responsibility.
Who inspected the guard prior to?
The sergeant. He had the final say on them, said they were good enough to go, and then that was it, because he was the boss.
Did the stick man selection come into this at this stage?
No, not at all.
This is basically still a training element.
It was a training in character building. It's supposed to be character building, giving them responsibility and that, you know. And they were being watched by the corporal all the time, even when they were talking to people outside, you know, how he behaved himself and this, that, and the other. You had to report on them. You had to put a report in on the individuals as to what they were like and what you thought they would be able to do, or would it be any good, or would they be need more training and this, that, and the other, you see, to come on. I think things were well thought out and well done.
Yeah. Were there any other duties other than just guard duty that you were involved in at this time?
No, not really.
No picket duties of any kind?
No, just the guard duty at the door.
That was at the main gate?
The main gate, yes.